counts, counts one and two, charged the crime of aggravated murder in the first degree.
One day I saw an account of a particularly brutal murder. What intrigued me wasn't the crime itself, but the way the murderer talked about his victims. Not as people, but as mere enemies.
The trial is set for June.
On Christmas Eve, 1985, David Rice rang the doorbell, pretending to deliver a package to a family he'd been told were communists. They weren't. Using a toy gun he purchased for $3, he forced the father, the mother, and two young children onto the floor, face down, and handcuffed the adults behind their backs. He said he was looking for information. But when they told him that dinner guests were coming, he panicked. He chloroformed the family. Then one by one, he struck them in the head repeatedly with a sharp end of a clothing iron. When he found their hearts still beating, he used a kitchen knife in the head wounds and in the chest. Then he turned out the lights and left by the back door. In June of 1986, he would be convicted of murder and sentenced to death. I knew this man wasn't normal. Perhaps he wasn't even sane. I also knew that it can be very misleading to draw parallels between an individual's experience and that of a nation. But there was a disturbing similarity between his rhetoric and the way political leaders try to justify their killing of enemies. So I didn't expect, by meeting a murderer, to understand the complexities of international conflicts. But I did think that someone who claimed that he killed for ideological reasons might give me some clues into the process of enemy making.
Hey, hold that then.
Going to 11?
Right.
Okay.
A lot of people are going to say I'm psycho or something like that, but there really is a definite plan to turn this world into a one-world communist government. It's proven and it's evident. All you have to do is look around.
Who are the ones? Who are the ones that try to take over? What other kinds of things have you seen that led you to this?
You can, like I said, you can just look around. The thing that really got to me and brought me into this was the fact that I had trained for a welding job, and I trained very hard for about a year, and I got one job out of that, and I was doing okay until the shop shut down. And I went on for just over a year before I finally came to the conclusion that something is definitely wrong. You know, something is wrong. This country does not get in this kind of shape without somebody actually putting it in that shape. And if you look around, all you have to do is open your eyes and see that, yeah, it's being done purposefully. And I believe it was in 67 that Khrushchev said that they would destroy our country and they wouldn't fire a shot doing it. In order to do that, they'll take the United States and they'll cause a civil war to do it.
You couldn't get anything more inappropriate if you tried than Rice killing this family of four totally innocent people. How is it that innocent people become enemies? Enemies so monstrous that they have to be destroyed. As I listened to Rice, I began to get a sense that his world was in shambles, that he felt totally threatened, and he needed to find somebody to blame. He needed an enemy.
Well, where did you find out about this, and who told you about this? And where?
Oh, like all the time you see on the street, little pamphlets people pass around, watching a videotape of maybe a speech.
Of?
General Moore.
General Jack Moore and the Christian Patriots group.
Right.
Uh-huh. Of what? Do you remember what they were about?
I remember one in particular that really hit me was when he mentioned that there were troops on either border.
In 1977, the Gulf of Baja, California, on December the 3rd, 1976, excuse me, there was a 27-ship convoy of Russian ships came around the point of the Baja and landed in these two areas here. These ships came in at nighttime. By the next morning, they were had been unloaded. They had been loaded onto flat cars that were waiting in this area here at this point, and this point. And from there, they were camouflaged, and they were sent up. Look where they went. Right up here to the border, from here to the border, another branch to the border here, up to the border in El Paso.
It is a war. It's always been a war. Even right up from World War II on, we have not been fighting the Koreans. We've not been fighting the Vietnamese. We've not been fighting the South Americans. We've been fighting the Soviets.
Clearly, Rice was not a soldier and had never been. But his delusions were based on reality. We perceive the Soviets as our enemy. And they perceive us as theirs.
How did you get involved in that drama?
Well, I was born illegitimately. That put me on the other side of the law. I've been an outlaw ever since I was born. I went to reform school when I was about 10, and I learned to box and cry, and I learned to do all the things that you do in reform school. Then I went to, I escaped there a bunch of times, and I went to prison, and I learned everything that you do in prison. And I talked to all the guys and asked them everything they knew. And they told me all the things they knew. And then I went to the end of it, and then the old man would be ready to die, and he'd say, "Well, son, sincerity is the best gimmick, remember that." And I'd say, "All right, be sincere, that'll win it." He said, "That's it. Sincerity and honesty," he said, "it'll do it, it'll trick them every time." I said, "Well, sincere and honesty, I never tried that." I tried everything else, but maybe I'll try sincere and honesty. So then I looked in the book and it said, "The wages of sin is death." Now I figured, well, I don't want to die, so maybe I have been sinful here. Maybe I am wrong. Maybe I'll take a look at my life and say, well, I'm going to change it and start all over. You know, and I know I go to God and I say, "Hey, man, you're going to forgive me?" And he's going to say, "What do? You forgive you? I mean, what did you come to me for? Forgive yourself, man. Don't be bothering me." You know, and I think, well, he must be a big, mighty God, man. He just, you know, he ain't got time. You got to make an appointment or something, you know. So I see the whole aspect of the whole trip for children to play, you know. And then I get stuck in the game of playing the goat here, or the lamb, or the some other trip. I was a teddy bear, and then I was a goofball and whatever. And what is the real one? Where's the real one? I don't know where the real one is. It's in a nut ward somewhere.
How do you feel about spending the rest of your life in prison?
Well, we're all our own prisons. We each are our own wardens, and we do our own times. We used to get stuck in our own little trips, and we kind of judge ourselves the way we do. You know, I can't judge nobody else. The best thing I can do is try to judge myself and live with that. See, what other people do is not really my affair, unless they approach me with it and want me to do something about it, then I'll take into consideration what has to be done. But other than that, I just try to do my number and do my time, get out on the main line, play some tennis, walk around, make the chow a little better, you know. And then there's a possibility the preacher could teach me something, because the preacher, the reverend, is quite a guy. And I'm finding that got two or three doctors here that got a lot of sense. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they got a lot of sense in my world, you know. And I've tried to shake two or three of them, but they're pretty smart. And then they got some pretty good inmates here trying to get out, work their lives into a decent sort of way. We're trying to promote harmony, pull ourselves together, be right, do right, and have the understanding of what it is in a congenial form for world peace. There's a lot of people working for world peace.
Let's assume that one day you were paroled. Let's just make believe. Do you ever think you will be?
Yeah, do I ever think I will be? Well, I've never been paroled before. I went up to the board and they said I was incorrigible. And not only was I incorrigible, but that I'd never grow up. And I kind of agreed with them. I had a war.
Well, let's just play make-believe here for a second. Let's make-believe. Let's make-believe you're getting out tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Okay.
And tomorrow creeps this petty face, yeah.
Would you go after anybody, Charles?
After anybody?
Let me try another one. Do you feel you have any scores to settle with anybody on the outside?
Let me think. Do I have any scores out there? And we're making believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll tell you, buddy. Well, I don't rightly know. I'm stupid to the point to where I'm not really sure. And if you'll ask the question again, maybe the answer will come to you. What was it again?
If you got out tomorrow, do you have any scores to settle on the outside?
Scores? You mean people that have done me wrong?
Or you feel you've done you wrong?
Oh, that feel that I've done them wrong?
No, feel that they've done you wrong.
Oh.
That you feel have done you wrong.
Oh, well, most people do themselves wrong.
But would you want to go get anybody?
No.
If you got out, no.
No, they push, see what they do. See, they take all that bad and then they push it off on each other. I told the dude, you're doing this to yourself, man. You know, I've been sitting in there. In other words, I'm in the cell, right? And he let me out, and I walk around, the guy says, if you don't do this, we're going to lock you back up. I said, okay, I don't care anyway. I done gave up that thought. Prison's in your mind, man, like, you know.
Okay.
You
okay.
Sit in the cell, and the guy says, you're in prison? I said, no, I'm just here. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm just sitting here waiting for these people to get done doing what they're doing so I can get out.
Do you have a television set? Do you watch television?
Yeah, I used to watch it a little bit, but it kind of looks, I don't really like it that much.
Okay, well, what about newspapers? Do you get newspapers?
No, I don't bother with those. I know that they're jiving there.
All right, what, radio? Listen to the radio?
I listen to a Hearts and Space program.
Yeah.
I like that. And the rest of it's just like a bunch of... There's no...
What about your music?
I get some classical music on the 98 station that's saying something.
Okay. But what about your own music? I remember reading that you at one time had a recording stint at a studio in Hollywood and that you liked guitar and you wrote music or sang music.
Yeah.
Do you still do that?
Yeah. Yeah, I do that. Yeah, I do that. But the way I do it ain't the same way you guys do it. And the way I do it scares you guys. So I didn't want to scare you guys out of the neighborhood right away. So I just took a can and started banging on it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But we used to have some cosmic gatherings back in the mountains that would probably shake a Mormon Tabernacle Choir's eardrums.
You said the kind of music you play scares people. Why shouldn't people be scared by you?
There's only one person you can be scared of, and that's yourself. Afraid of what? Losing your bank account? Afraid of your wife going away? You have all those things. I'm not afraid of losing my watch or someone taking my money or robbing me. I went down to Mexico in the 50s and down where the Yaquis was, and they said, man, you don't go down where the Yaquis are. He said, they're terrible. I said, why? He said, well, they don't like people like you. I says, well, they didn't say anything.
Yeah, but I asked the question in the context that, will you believe it or not, there are a lot of people on the outside that think about the possibility of you coming out of here, and they're genuinely scared of
you. Oh, boy, I might just make dust. Everything. Terrible. One little guy. Terrible. Ooh. Boy, how insecure are we as human beings? Put all our fear on one little guy. Afraid to let him out. He might break all the toys.
Why do you say little guy?
Because I'm not the guy you're trying to make out of me. That's not me. That's some guy in somebody's imagination that wanted to make a couple hundred million dollars for himself. He got rich. He had a good game going. He had a better game going than I did, but he had a good mother to help him. She helped him in a nice game. I was kind of over on the sideline. See, I had to get around that game and look over the tracks.
Okay, now, here we go on mother again for a second. You said he had a nice mother to help him. Does that mean you did not have a nice mother to help you?
Oh, well, I imagine I got a whole lot of nice mothers that would help me. If I would help them, you know, how much would you help yourself?
When I asked you why you got married, you said for sex.
That's when I was 20 years old.
Yeah. This is funny. What kind of sex life is there for Charles in this prison?
Well, I a bit now and then.
Mm-hmm.
I try to hide it, not to embarrass other people. But I've been doing it ever since I was 10. I get to thinking, here I'm an old man sitting in the cell. That's the damnest thing I ever seen, you know. It looks like I grow up, but I really don't know how yet. I'm learning.
Preacher
teaching me how to grow up.
Do you miss women?
Certainly. My goodness, yeah, damn right. Yeah.
What do you think of women?
Oh, I like them. Yeah, they're nice. They're put together well and everything, and they're soft and spongy. Yeah, they're nice. As long as they keep their mouth shut and do what they're supposed to do.
Why do you say that?
Because that's what a woman's supposed to do.
Keep her mouth shut and do what she's supposed to do?
Sure.
Who taught you that?
Well, I don't want her snitching on me.
What do you want the world to know about you?
The world has been fed many lies about me. I have read very few truths.
Who are you?
Just a guy.
At the time, Ramirez was certainly a guy, attracting a lot of attention. Since his arrival at the San Francisco jail, women from around the country, including one of the female jurors who had found him guilty in Los Angeles, had been flocking to the San Francisco facility, even fighting with each other over Richard's affections.
I have friends. That is all I care to say, really. They are open-minded people.
And it was here, in a cramped room in a San Francisco jail, that I interviewed the man known as the Night Stalker. A memorable face-off, with me asking questions, and Ramirez, for the most part, reading from a script.
Did you kill 13 people?
It would be improper for me to comment on my LA convictions and on my pending case here in San Francisco.
Why?
Because of my appeals.
Are you appealing these because you say you're innocent? You didn't kill 13 people?
That is correct.
You didn't kill 13 people?
Again, it would be improper for me to comment in any regard to that question.
You have now entered a very rare group of people in this country. You're in the ranks of Charlie Manson, Ted Bundy. You claim you didn't commit these murders, but you're right in there now as far as everybody else is concerned.
Serial killers do on a small scale what governments do on a large one. They are a product of the times, and these are bloodthirsty times. Even psychopaths have emotions if you dig deep enough, but then again, maybe they don't.
Do you have emotions, Richard?
No comment.
Tell me what kind of emotions you got going through you right now.
I'll tell you what, I gave up on love and happiness a long time ago.
Why?
I don't care to explain that. Let the quote stand for itself. People in this day and age are brainwashed and programmed like a computer at being nothing more than puppets. This nation, this country is founded in violence. Violent delights tend to have violent ends. Madness is something rare in individuals, but in groups, people, and ages. It is a rule. Killing is killing, whether done for duty, profit, or fun. Men murdered themselves into this democracy.
You're good at reading your script, Richard, but you're not much at answering my direct questions. A lot was made that you're a devil worshiper. Do you worship the devil? Have you ever studied Satanism?
There are different sects of Satanism.
Have you just yes or no? Have you studied Satanism?
Yes, I have.
Are you a worshiper of the devil?
No comment.
Come on, Richard.
I can tell you a little bit about Satanism.
Well, I'm interested in hearing what you got to say then.
It is undefiled wisdom instead of hypocritical self-deceit. It is power without charity. A Satanist admits to being evil.
Do you admit to being evil, Richard?
We are all evil in some form or another, are we not?
I'm asking you the questions, my friend.
Yes, I am evil. Not 100%, but I am evil. Evil has always existed. The perfect world most people seek shall never come to pass, and it's going to get worse. The great epoch of our life is when we gain the courage to rebaptize our evil qualities as being our best qualities.